You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Continue here on a Wednesday morning, Mike McNamara with you, and fortunate to be joined by somebody who's become a quite the favorite on the program, and that's Grant Newsham. So, Grant, first of all, what's it feel like to be the people's champion?
Well, I guess there's not much competition, I would suggest.
Well, I would tell you that when you the self-described combination of Bill O'Reilly and Al Sharpton. I mean, I don't hear too many people tagging themselves like that. So, so congratulations on that deal.
I am sort of joking, of course,
sort of. Wanted to have you back after last weekend, and since you're the explainer in chief of things in the Pacific Rim, and certainly at this point, the focus of the world is on North Korea. So. First of all, explain the parade that we watched. I mean, I think we're all familiar with the May Day parade that the Russians used to hold and are used to seeing the missiles go rolling down the streets and people goose-stepping, all the rest of that. Is it more significant, less significant in Korea? Is it a version of the same? Is it message sending? Is it displaying new technology? What was the, tell us about it historically and then bring us up to snuff on what it was.
Well, it's all the things that you mentioned, and using that example of the old Soviet May Day parades where you trot out, your hardware, you have your soldiers goose-step by. It is to demonstrate really the splendor of the regime. Sending a message as much to its own people, but also to attempt to intimidate overseas audiences. The North Korean one, it just fits that model. And as you can see, they have tough, scary-looking troops come by. They have missiles, tanks, etc. And this isn't the first time. It's just a predictable, regular event. But it's intended, of course, to try and demonstrate North Korea is a powerful country and, can look after itself and fight back. One thing that's particularly interesting about these is that if you look at them over, say, a 10, 20-year span, that there has been a steady advancement in capability, particularly missile hardware. You do find some commentators, of course, claim, well, some of these missiles are fake or they're, it's Potemkin sort of stuff. But nonetheless, there is this steady, gradual progress in North Korean missile capability in particular. And that really is the weapon that allows them to get out and get a long ways and actually hurt people, particularly us. And so one should not dismiss what they see as just the regime showing off, but do keep in mind that over the last 10, 20 years, North Korea has made some very important and dangerous military technological advances.
So it's more than simply saber-rattling. Talk to us about specifically, were they showing off new missiles? I mean, I read several versions and, of what guys thought. Were they showing anything that we hadn't seen before or hadn't believed that they possessed?
Not really. I would have to say no. Our people who follow this have a pretty good understanding of what the North Koreans have. So there really weren't any surprises, but there's been almost a sense of denial on the U.S. side, and that's outside of the people who really follow this. So there's a sense of denial that the North Koreans really are making progress, either missile-wise or nuclear weapons-wise. The experts know they are, but as I say, nobody seems to want to think about it. And now it's gotten to the point where North Korea really can't be ignored the way it was for a long time. You have a problem you either live with or else you do something about it. Although it is also worth noting that, and this has gotten some attention as well, that the Chinese have been very helpful in North Korea's missile and nuclear development programs in various ways, but also the one particular way is providing, essentially providing the transporters for some of these long-range missiles. Also the sort of China-origin trucks are very useful as well for moving the missiles around. I believe some of those were actually on display during the parade. So our friends, the Chinese, have not been very helpful.
That seems to be a little bit of a constant theme in all of this. And yet, somehow or other, we expect that at some point they're going to be helpful. Who's playing who in all of this? If we could, let me hit the pause X on North Korea for a second. And let me talk about the triangle. Well, I don't know what shape, geometric shape it is, but you have the Chinese on one side, you have Japan, the United States. It would seem to me that, you know, China is going to have certainly has the white hot spotlight focused on North Korea, because everybody's looking at China saying, hey, look, the United States obviously is taking a different tack on this, and China, you can intervene in this, and everybody believes that you, and you said as much, Grant, if they participated in sanctions, then it ups the ante short of war. And yet they choose not to do that. That when we do sanction, we sanction, you know, everybody else in Korea, but not the people who rule it. And so, is China going to get the white hot spotlight focused on their behavior and ultimately come out of this diminished because they won't help in the eyes of modern nations? You can prevent this, and give me your thoughts on that.
Well, it depends. Consider that for just take the last 25 years when the North Korean nuclear program has really been the subject of attention. China has really been of no help at all in reining in the North Koreans or particularly their nuclear program. And there's been it's been well known for many years that Chinese companies, Chinese individuals, and very often these do track back to the government, have assisted the North Korean economy, the missile program, the nuclear programs in many ways. There's been some good Western press reporting finally just in this last week about this very point, but it's been going on for a good long while. So this is, you might compare it to some guy who wants to go out with a girl and she keeps telling him, I'll go out with you, and she never does. And yet that has worked very well unfortunately, with the Americans, who have always thought that somehow the Chinese are going to help us and fix this. And the Chinese just, you know, well, basically do nothing. In fact, their statements actually make it sound as though the U.S. is the cause of the problems on the North Korean peninsula because they won't talk to the North Koreans. So this long-standing U.S. government expectation that China is going to help it out with North Korea is, one might suggest that after a quarter century, there might be some skepticism, and I think there is in the new Trump administration in certain quarters. But then like any new administration, there's different factions, there's different beliefs, and there does appear to be one part of the Trump administration's thinking which suggests that China really will help us out, and also that the economic ties are so important that we don't want to pressure China too much. So at the end of the day, I think what's happened just in the last few weeks is that the Trump administration's statements that they've talked enough times, you know, and America will take care of this if China won't, has at least gotten the People's Republic of China to rethink their longstanding approach. But whether the Trump administration continues this very strict approach towards China it remains open. I think that's open to question, and I would be skeptical of it just because what you call it, the inertia, is always for doing, taking the path of least resistance, and that is to continue relying on China rather than doing some, making some really tough choices in terms of what the administration is going to do towards North Korea and towards China to get China to actually do something about North Korea. So I'm not convinced this is a sea change, but certainly this is something new that we've seen in just the last few weeks. Whether the Trump administration keeps it up or not, I don't know.
My guest this morning, Grant Newsham, who no stranger to Allmarine Radio, and so the Grant, so just so I hear you straight, China's never been of any help. So where do we get? Is it just delusional to think they're going to help? I mean, how do we? Because again, if you ask most Americans, who's going to solve this? And the answer would be, well, I mean, we all pray to God that it does, there's not a shooting war. So, I mean, the Chinese are going to have to help us. Where does that come from? I mean, at some point, don't you have to call a spade? Or can we simply delude ourselves into a policy that has no intellectual basis in fact?
A quarter century is a long time.
Yep.
For the girl not to go out on a date with you. and it does, it becomes, a, at some point, it does become self-delusion. It's easy to do. There's also, like anything like that, you can always rationalize why it's the best and the only decent choice. But it is pretty silly after this time, all this time. And there's been a belief that, well, China couldn't possibly want a nuclear-armed North Korea, or one with missiles that could reach the United States. They just wouldn't want that. That's the belief, but I think not necessarily. North Korea serves almost the role of, a pit bull, a pet pit bull that you can use to sort of make the neighbors uncomfortable, particularly the westernized parts of Asia, South Korea, Japan. It irks the Americans as well. So if you look at, as it plays that kind of a role for China, actually, it's not bad to have your rivals sort of worrying about things.
Right.
One might look at what the Russians are doing with Iran, where Iran has been, it's a historic enemy of Russia, yet Russia has supported Iran militarily, support and given them some pretty good capabilities, and Iran also pushes Islamic fundamentalism, which is something Russia is not all that keen on yet. Right. Because it irks the Americans so much that Mr. Putin is glad to work with the Iranians. And with China and North Korea, there is that angle to it, that as long as it's China's rivals that are, you know, worried about what goes on the peninsula, well, it's not that big a deal from China's perspective. It may be short-sighted. It may not make sense from our perspective, but I don't think we've actually thought that through as much as we should have. But once again, certainly after a quarter of century, one might say, haven't we tried? What we've tried hasn't been working. Why don't we try something else?
It defies. I mean, when you think that. Okay, so a quarter of a century we've gone down this road with nothing to show for it, and we think that's okay. So war game this with me, Grant. How does this turn out? Does the United States back away? Do we find some kind of outlet and say we recall the carrier battle group because of this, or do we continue to push on North Korea because? Again, the last time you were on, you talked about, we kind of went through a little bit of, if there's a shooting war, North Korea has been preparing this since the 1950s. And the number of gun positions, the number of things that they can do have all been engineered to design, to withstand a first punch from the United States, Korea, and everybody else who might participate. That's how they built that thing. And so, what gives in this whole thing? Did the North Koreans give? Did the Chinese ultimately come to the table and say, hey, we can fix this thing for you?
The North Koreans, I don't see them making any concession.
Okay.
They never have, and they've actually, one really must hand it to them for having played the Americans and played their adversaries pretty well. So I don't see, and I also give up these weapons and regime survival is at stake in North Korea. I don't see the Chinese voluntarily really doing what is necessary to remove the nuclear capability from North Korea. What I would guess is that we're going to see an effort on the U.S. side to put in some much stricter economic and financial sanctions against North Korea. I don't know how those will succeed unless the sanctions include a component which really goes after China for cooperating with North Korea. We'd also want to have some sort of a coherent strategic communications plan as well, really to reveal Chinese cooperation and assistance to North Korea. U.S. government seems incapable of that, unfortunately. But if they ever got it right, that would be helpful. I think we're going to see more sanctions and financial controls on North Korea. Those could work. Will they work? I don't know. And if that doesn't do the job, then at some point an administration, either this one or maybe the next one, is going to really have a couple of really bad choices and decide whether or not America will live with a North Korea that is capable of launching nuclear weapons into the United States and hitting what they think they can, what they say they will hit. Do you live with that? Do you live with the daily threats and hectorings from North Korea? Or do you do something about it? But there's also another school of thought which still exists, and I expect it will make its reappearance at some point. And that calls for, you just talk. We just have to negotiate with the North Koreans. We can talk this out. And that's always there. Yeah, that's partly an American belief that you can talk out and you can talk through any problem if you just get out and talk to people. We don't do very well with that approach in Asia, but there is that thinking. Those people are quiet for now, but they'll come back, I'm sure. So that's just a general sense of a few of the options or sort of how I see things playing out.
As you look at this, it's certainly riveting stuff. As we watch it, something that we've all in the military, especially in the Marine Corps, because most of us have been there, have followed this story for years. But North Korea never had the capabilities that it had prior to this. So to reset my guest this morning, Grant Newsham, and he's a senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies. He's a retired Marine colonel, made his life's work in intelligence, and was the first Marine liaison officer to the Japanese Ground Self-Defense Force. Did I get all that right?
That's right. You're batting 100.
Hey, after the fifth time, nice. Depressing. I don't know. It doesn't look like we have too many cards to play. If there were other cards, we would certainly bring them. We can do sanctions again, but according to you, Grant, if the Chinese don't participate, it's an exercise in in posturing maybe at best.
I would caveat, as I say, the sanctions, as I've noted, they could actually work very well. But they have to be applied against Chinese entities as well. Until China feels some heat, real heat, for the support it's given North Korea, for its unwillingness to even follow existing sanctions, I wouldn't expect anything we would do to be decisive on the sanctions front. But if you do, the sanctions do have to have a Chinese component to them to be effective.
All right. So can we look at this from China's perspective?
We can, you know, and certainly that's important to do.
Right.
And it is, as I noted, that China's view of North Korea is very different than ours in many respects, in that they don't see it, North Korea really as that much of a threat to them. It causes, as noted, it causes China's enemies trouble and problems that distracts attention. So that's actually not a bad thing from China's perspective. And there is also the concern one often hears that China does not want a collapse of the North Korean regime.
Right.
And the hundreds of thousands or maybe millions of refugees who would come into China. So that's the basic argument. That's one of the main arguments, is this fear of collapse in North Korea. But why they having to give up North nuclear weapons and or missile technology, why that would lead to a collapse of the North Korean regime is never quite thought through as much as it should be. So, you know, for those reasons, you know, China has not been all that that interested in trying to rein in North Korea. So, and plus there is the Korean War experience, where China, of course, did fight on behalf of North Korea. But once again, that is getting to be 70, that's getting to be a long time ago.
Right.
And so that is less of a consideration, although it routinely gets trotted out by the Chinese government.
And the purpose, I mean, China is obviously not even close to being the same nation that it was at that point. It has much, much, it has much greater interest in its economic ties around the world than it does to the Korean Peninsula in particular. I mean, I don't. So I guess I'm a bit, when I look at it, I see that China likes North Korea in terms of they are a burr in America's saddle, under America's saddle. And we like that, as you mentioned, as the Russians enjoy their, you know, somewhat, as you said, they don't like Islamic fundamentalism. Iran is a huge exporter of that, yet they love their partnership because it is another burr under the American saddle. So from the Chinese perspective, why intervene? Why? How do we? And how do we as the Chinese play this to exact the maximum payment or concession from the Americans? Is that the game that we'll ultimately see play out?
We just might. We've seen it play out for a good long while now, with the belief on the U.S. side is that the Chinese cooperation on things like climate change, the Middle East, Chinese cooperation is so important that we cannot really pressure them over North Korea. Yet China hasn't really delivered on any of those things very well either. So China, you know, to their credit, from in a certain way of looking at it, has done a very good job of stringing America along,
right,
with the belief that just a little more talk, a little more time, that we'll get somewhere with North Korea, but without ever actually producing. And that's one of the it may be a short-term thing why the Trump administration has been so, in some respects, refreshing, in that it's been willing to say, you know, we haven't produced anything. You know, what we tried has not worked. Maybe something else needs to be tried, even though this could have been seen a good long while ago.
Right.
When I was 25 years or so. Yeah, you know, I'd mentioned the Banco Delta Asia case in Macau in 2006, when very strong financial sanctions were put on a North Korean-connected bank that also had Chinese connections. And this was immensely effective. The Bush administration, unfortunately, withdrew the sanctions and gave the North Koreans their money back. But this lack of Chinese cooperation has been, it's been well known for a long time. But even Republican administrations have not thought it worth doing anything about it.
All right, Grant, can we take about a 2-minute break, then come back and do a few more minutes? Is that
sure.
All right with you? All right. You're listening to a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Our guest is I don't know what I would call him, our Far East specialist, Grant Newsham. But he makes us smart, and I told him before he came on the air, he is becoming one of the favored guests on All Marine Radio, if not the favored guest, because of making us all smart about an area and a place that we don't study probably nearly as much as we should, but thankfully guys like Grant have, and so they're in a position to make us smart. So more of Grant Newsham on a Wednesday coming up next right here on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue here on a Wednesday. We're privileged again to be joined by the one and only Grant Newsham. And Grant, for those of you who know, he is a senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies. He's a retired United States Marine colonel and graciously joins us. And again, Grant, let me just tell you, I appreciate you getting up early or staying up late, depending where you are on the planet, because you tend to get around a little bit. And so thank you very much for always accommodating us. I appreciate it.
No problem at all.
Let's go back to Korea. The other event that happened over the course of the weekend was a missile launching and that was extremely unsuccessful to the point of maybe possibly being embarrassing. If it was designed to be a show of strength, it certainly didn't qualify as that. Give me your thoughts on that.
You know, it's always nice to see them blow up shortly after launch, but it's part of the development process. I mean, I of course have no idea at all if anything sort of behind the scenes is going on. I wouldn't be surprised if there was, you know, wouldn't be surprised if there was, and I would certainly hope there is, but I have no idea. But it, you know, once again, it is at least part of the development process, and by trial and error, they're going to gradually make progress, as they've been doing. So while something like this slows things down, all it's doing is slowing things down. It's not really changing the trajectory, in terms of where North Korea is probably going to get if things continue as they are. And it's really just an engineering problem, for the North Koreans. To through trial and error get better and better and eventually end up with missiles that nuclear weapons fit on and that can go where you send them and that hit what you want them to hit. And they've been getting, as noted, help from China. It's generally surreptitious, but not all that hard to figure out. In a lot of cases, the Iranians have been helping the North Koreans and vice versa. So I see this really as just one incident and playing out over time. All it is doing is maybe it's just slowing things down a bit. You know, if you look at our own missile development program, you see these old black and white films of missiles blowing up on the launch pads. It is in some ways part of the game, but I would suspect there is something going on behind the scenes to try and slow things down for the North Koreans, but ultimately one suspects they'll probably get where they want to go as long as, say, things continue as they are.
The series of articles that were written by the New York Times, David Sanger, and they're, the one is called Trump Inherits a Secret Cyber War Against North Korean Missiles, and then there's a couple others that have been written. U.S. Strategy to Hobble North Korea Was Hidden in Plain Sight. Eureka Moment for Two Times Reporters. North Korea's missiles launches were failing too often. Have you seen those? Have you read them?
Well, yes, I've taken a look at those.
All right. And do you place any stock in them?
Well, to a degree, very often reporters are kind of in awe of what they think is the covert action world or the covert world. And I think there is a tendency to put too much, to give it too much credit sometimes, and then other times not give it enough credit. But I don't. And there is also, sometimes if you are doing something, or even if you're not, you would like the other side to think you are, to make them worry. So I don't, I would give those a little bit of credit or credence, but, at the same time, the reporting on these subjects is, it's not always as accurate as it might be. But in this particular case, I have no inside information about this. And even if I did, I wouldn't tell anybody. And so I'm always a little, I always think it kind of unfortunate that reporters will report things like this, especially if they're working. But it's how we are. But I am familiar with those articles. But it's counting on this sort of a silver bullet to bring a halt to what the North Koreans are doing and to what the North Koreans have in mind is often something like most silver bullets. It's best not to count on it. That this would be trying to deal with North Korea is a multifaceted, multi-directional approach. So there are, of course, a lot of things going on. One thing that just in the sort of the amusing part of this, if one considers where we've gotten today with North Korea, say starting from 25 years ago, that some of the people who are responsible for this mess, one knows that all of them have failed upwards. I won't name any names, but it's the human experience where the bigger the failure, the bigger the promotion. But one is in awe of the lack of progress over 25 years and feel sorry for the Trump administration having been handed a pretty bad situation to have to deal with. But that does come with the territory if one wants to be president.
I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm thinking nothing short of war stops North Korea from, not only having a nuclear weapon, but having an intercontinental ballistic missile that will allow it to reach out and touch. Yes?
Well, that's one. I've always said that the economic and the financial pressure is what would be effective. And that is one of the things that really makes all this so almost heartbreaking, is that although this option has been available for many years, and once again that Macau bank case in 2006 shows what is doable and how effective it is, that option has never been used. And because of that, we're now in a position where people are actually talking about going to war on the Korean Peninsula as something almost inevitable. It's unfortunate that we've gotten to this point, because there is this other option, the financial economic pressure, that simply has never been tried in any real way. It's still possible. And one hopes that someone will take advantage of this method, this approach, because I would consider almost anything preferable to going to war. And it's potentially effective. And one way to consider this is the Kim regime does have many of the characteristics of an organized crime group. The one thing that organized crime groups depend on, it's the sort of the oxygen that keeps them alive, is money. And if you starve them of oxygen, well, it has a real effect. And that is where this approach, the financial economic pressure, is one that potentially would just be, could be very, very successful. As noted, it is, you would need to, make it, so it is not in China's interest to continue, the support they've been giving to North Korea. So there is an option besides war, but one hopes that we would finally take advantage of it. But will we? I don't know.
I'm getting a headache because I don't see, like, why does China rein in and take this spur out from, or the scenario I'm thinking of says this goes sideways, we continue this dance until China perceives that this is on the verge of getting out of control, actually getting out of control, and somebody shooting. And then China, you know, extracts the pound, it's 2 pounds of flesh from the United States, and we concede, or what we need to concede on to get China to do the islands that they want in the East China Sea?
Oh, that would be one possibility. To effectively cede control of almost all of East Asia would do nicely from the Chinese perspective. But the South China Sea would be a nice margin. That would be a nice, easily definable part of the area. You know, even with an informal commitment, maybe done quietly, that America won't contest China, whatever it does down there. Won't raise that question of the Hague Tribunal ruling against what China is doing. You could have some tacit agreement like that. You could have some sort of an agreement not to pressure China for things like intellectual property theft, violation of World Trade Organization rules, misuse of state-owned enterprises. So there's plenty of things that China could ask for and just might get them. But one wonders if they would. But those would also would result in certainly a very serious loss in American influence. That would be demoralizing for the nations in East Asia which want to be aligned with the United States. Unless you pressure China, if you try to cut a deal with them, you're going to end up giving away more than one would like.
Right.
And one of the things that makes this even more perplexing is that in the event of, say, a conflict on the Korean Peninsula of any sort, I would suggest even firing one round somewhere, that this is going to cause immense economic disruption worldwide, but certainly regionally. So one shouldn't expect that, you know, this export machine that where stuff flows out of China to the U.S., to Europe, to around the world, one shouldn't expect that this is just going to continue uninterrupted. And it would be astonishing if China didn't know that, but maybe they're as capable of delusion as we are. But this is something that would cause them much, much more harm than they would suffer if they were to force China to rein in its nuclear and missile programs.
Grant Newsham, my guest, here on a Wednesday. Okay, so as I wrap my head around this thing, here's a question that as I relate this to a conversation I had with somebody. Is there any possibility that a limited war would get waged between the United States, South Korea, and North Korea without escalating into a larger confrontation?
It's probably possible in the sense that anything is possible. But one shouldn't count on that sort of thing, of course. Think of the disruption. Just take Japan, for example. If somehow a missile hits Japan, and the idea of a war being fought just across the ocean from Japan, this is going to cause a lot of stress on Japanese society. It's going to have an economic effect as well. And you're going to find these similar stresses throughout the region. So even if, say, the actual shooting is relatively confined, that this is going to have a considerable sort of psychological effects, political effects, and economic effects throughout the region. So even if one is able to somehow contain the fighting to a specific area, the knock-on effects regionally and globally would be considerable. So that the idea of just a neat little war, I guess, like people have kind of gotten used to in recent years, where
that ain't happening.
You know that it's hard to imagine. Plus, we haven't had a war in a first world country. Basically, South Korea would be right in there, and that is that's a first world country. Japan is, and they're going to be sucked in to some degree. And even China is at least a first world economy. We haven't seen anything like that for a good long while, that I can think of. So this would, one imagines, and predicting these things is always difficult, if not impossible. To get them exactly right is probably impossible. But I think that's not a bad guess to make. That this would not be easy or short.
So we've looked at this problem from China's perspective. What about Japan's perspective? Does Japan want a hard line struck with North Korea? Because it would seem to me that Japan and the nations of the Western Pacific stand to be the biggest losers if the United States cuts a deal. And as you said repeatedly, that those nations live in fear that the United States is going to sell them out in some agreement with China over some other issue, and cede to China control over various areas that the United States either doesn't have the interest that they used to have or their interest has evolved. Japan's perspective in all this, what is it?
Japan is awfully worried about this. Certainly the government is worried, and even it's sort of dribbled down into the populace writ large, where there is a pretty good, clear understanding of the North Korean threat, and a concern over it. It's not as if people are going about their lives fretting or crying or anything. But this has certainly gotten Japan's attention. North Korea always has. Just because it's so close for no other reason. But one of the curious aspects of this is, although Japan sees North Korea as a huge threat and a threat to Japan, it doesn't seem as though this has been enough to get the Japanese government to spend more on defense as it needs to do, or to seriously address the operational and organizational shortcomings of the Japan Self-Defense Forces. So one wonders exactly what kind of a shock or what kind of pressures are going to be necessary to get Japan to address the fundamental problems in its own defensive capabilities. But it doesn't seem as though what's taken place to date has been enough.
It is astounding. But I would draw a parallel between the United States and when you look at some of the areas that we need to take seriously. We've seen 3,000 people be killed in our country, two of the largest buildings dropped, and yet we poo-poo security issues. What needs to happen in order for us to take this stuff more seriously, and to conclude the wars that we fight, in particular phase four, to bring those to to conclude them in a way that has a positive outcome for the region and the United States? We seem to be content to just walk away. And so I think it's hard for me anyway to be critical of China when they're doing it seems like they do the exact same thing the United States is. We'll go do stuff and hope for something better, even though that we screwed the whole thing up. And to me, the Japanese, it must be extremely I don't know the right word to use. Sobering is not, but When you're helpless, when you can't provide for your own defense as a nation, I don't know how you don't stop, look around, and say, "All right, We need to sit down and talk because we've historically been a power in the region. And we are inert right now. We are nothing here. And we need to be something. We need to be able to defend this island that we call home. And to that extent, we need larger military across the board. Is that debate going on in Japan? Is it, cause I don't read much about it, if it is, certainly. So tell me about that debate. Look, the sins of World War II are long in the rearview mirror. We have now got to join, the free nations, the other free nations around the world as a full and equal partner and carry our share of the burden. Is that discussion not going on in Japan?
It's going on in certain quarters. It's not a widespread discussion. But in fairness, Japan does have a reasonable defense capability for certain things, not against a major threat. It has some very good niche capabilities. So it does have a certain capability, and it does make some effort. But as noted, it's really inadequate for the threats it faces. I think that part of it, maybe two ways to look at this, is one is that it's just human beings are pretty good at explaining away problems or difficulty, just trying either ignoring it, rationalizing it, or just not thinking about it and hoping it sort of goes away. But the other one, and I think we see this with our NATO friends, is this pathologic dependence on the United States, which is built up over decades, where there's a sense that ultimately it's the Americans that will save us, that will backstop our defense. And so as long as we do something, kind of make an effort, that it's okay because the Americans are there to take care of it. And we see that in Europe a lot as well. But in Japan, sometimes it's unwitting. It's not always, but sometimes it is, that over the years that there is the sense that Japan is a safe place. Some people recognize it is because the Americans underwrite security. But a lot of that, there is a widespread belief in the political world and even in the public at large that Japan's is safe. It's just naturally safe. So that's, I think, why we've kind of gotten to the point we are today. What it will take to actually wake up Japan, I don't know. I have a feeling it will take for want of a better expression, people getting killed. It just might take that kind of a shock to the system to sort of correct things. So we are where we are.
Can I just make a quick comment? How in God's name could you as a sovereign government look at the way the United States does things militarily around the world and say, well, they're going to help us? They've destabilized Iraq. They're messing around in Afghanistan and seem not to have a direction. They seem to be groping for one, but they don't seem to have one. And we're gonna put the faith, our faith as a nation, that they're gonna do the right thing. It would be an interesting discussion to be a part of. I don't know that you can make the case that the United States is capable of that anymore. It just seems like when we get hard, when things get hard, we struggle with that. So I'm just curious about the whole the picture you paint of America being stiffed on a date for 25 years and yet still going down that path. The Chinese will help. Well, you know what? The Chinese may help, but it is going to cost you mightily in the Western Pacific, which is maybe what they want. And to me, if I was Chinese, that's what I would want. I would say, look, to both Japan and the United States, if you want us to deal with this, and we're willing to, it is going to cost you these islands in the East China Sea, period.
Yeah, though the Chinese, look at the good deal they got just by holding out the promise of help on climate change. They did pretty well just on that. How much more could they get for helping us out with North Korea?
Yeah, what do you want?
One talks about the Trump administration being deal makers. Well, the Chinese are pretty good at it too. And it doesn't hurt when they haven't exactly, on the U.S. side, we've not been the best negotiators ever, probably since Benjamin Franklin got the French to help us in the Revolutionary War. So I would imagine that the Chinese have a pretty good deal they might cut if we're not careful. But we do have aces to play. I wish we would play them more often than we do. But with Japan, you know, I think there's always been some question as to what, and this goes back long before China or North Korea were problems. There's always been some question of just how much the Americans would do for Japan. But I think in this case, there's a belief that America will do what it says it will. And I think that in Northeast Asia, I would actually suggest that I would be fairly optimistic that, that if push comes to shove, that America will do the right thing. So I'm see it a little different. I'm maybe less pessimistic about that.
I understand, you know, but I also as a planner, I know that hope's not a course of action. And if I asked you to footnote intellectually, what is that based on? I think that we would come up with very mixed results relative to the footnotes, that a lot of should-haves and a lot of maybe, but in terms of actual, I mean, China has made out extremely well in every interaction where we, I don't want to say, brush up against confrontation, where we, you know, where we do the dance. China seems to have made out very well, and I just don't see what's in their interest other than something large. Like the islands in the East China Sea, that gives them access and breaks contain, as General Tulin told me. I don't see, why would they help the United States? Doesn't stand to reason that they would. And, so interesting. What will we see next? Get out your crystal ball, Newsham, and, now this is the big moneymaker question. What will we see next? We saw the big parade. The battle group headed up there. That was big news. Now we sit and we'll drill circles in the ocean with the battle group. They'll go to port and go back to sea and go to port and go back to sea. You might see one of the Muse head over in that direction. If they're not already there, what's next? We go sideways in this thing for a while?
I think so. It turns out the battle groups didn't actually get there. According to what's being reported now, but they'll get there. But the I think you're going to I think we'll see the North will continue this constant sort of testing, some success, some failures, but they'll continue their test programs. There'll probably be a nuclear test at some point. There always is, and I think you'll see the Americans. I think we are probably going to see some more serious, finally some economic and financial sanctions. But the real test thing to watch is, do they affect Chinese entities? If they don't, then one should be skeptical about their ultimate effect. But I think we'll see that. And I think the carrier groups operating in the area, as you note, those either you either keep that up forever or it's really an ephemeral, just a temporary thing. I would suggest more of the same with an effort to apply some more economic and financial pressure and this continuing to hope the Chinese will help us out. How that plays out, I don't know. But it's the idea that we're headed to war, say next week. I don't quite see that yet. Okay. I still think there's a card to play. But the North Koreans, that they'll continue doing what they do. And they'll get it right eventually by trial and error.
Right.
And at some point, one isn't going to be able, you either accept it or do something about it. When that will happen, I don't know if it will be this administration or another one, but I would expect we will get there eventually.
All right, sir. Again, I want to thank you for getting up, staying up, all the different things you do to be on with us. Love having you on, Grant. And I speak for a lot of people who I one of the constant comments I get about Grant is, I'm the smartest person at work because I listen to Homer and Radio and Grant Newsham. Nobody knows as much about North Korea, about the Pacific Rim as I do by listening to Homer and Radio. So, and you know what, Grant? Let me tell you, one of the reasons I love doing this, I love doing it in the company of Marines. I love making other people smart and showing them, showcasing our expertise and the guys we have with expertise around the world. And I think it's very cool. So thank you very much for doing this.
No pleasure. Always glad to have the opportunity. Thank you.
All right. More of Omri Radio coming up next.